Well, this is new, isn't it? Hello, everyone. My name's Will Vincent from RaceBot TV, and welcome to the premiere episode of RaceBot Talk. Now, I will actually get someone to record this for next time, but we are recording this live. We have told all the people on the show today not to swear, but if they do, we apologize in advance. And most importantly, all the views they have are their own. They are not the opinion of RaceBot TV, iRacing, RFAT, Giosetto Corsa, or anyone else in the world. And with that, let's get started, shall we? So I've got four guests here today. It was literally last minute. You know what? I'll start a little bit beforehand. We were supposed to have done this last week in Milton Keynes, and my horrific planning, and I really hope the people who are looking at my job application for a promotion don't see this, my time management sucked. So it meant that we couldn't get Will Chadwick in Milton Keynes. Instead, however, we've got Stefan Schlacker, Justin Prince, Terry Radford, and Will Chadwick, who looks as though he's in a field doing some interesting stuff with a headset in the back. So I'm going to come to you first, Will, very quickly. Let's talk about Milton Keynes last week, because you were there, you had some fun, and I've just told you that you actually won a prize. So congratulations.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. Yeah, it was a really, really fun event. Really enjoyed it. It was great to put it on and everyone to come down and show so much support for the event, and just a new experience for myself. And yeah, really, really fun. Enjoyed it.
Well, enjoy your time in the field. We are going to talk to you. We'll talk more about why he's not wearing Ford uniform and his headset combination, which cannot be bought on the internet either. But okay, we've got three topics that we want to talk about today. The first one of these is going to be about the event actually that we're broadcasting in 2 hours from now. It's the iRacing Indianapolis 500, and we've got an all-star crew who pretty much all like IndyCar. Justin, I'm going to come to you first, because you've been around the longest. The iRacing Indy 500. We know it as one of the biggest events on iRacing. Is that really still the case, though, compared to what we've had this year? The Daytona 24 Hours has exploded. The Daytona 500 has been incredible. The Sebring 12 Hours has been incredible. Even the 24 Hours of the Nürburgring, one of the smallest events of the year, that's exploded as well.
Well, I would still say absolutely it's worth the hype, because it's one of the most desired and special events in regards to all of motorsports racing in its history. When you think about the real world counterpart, the greatest spectacle in racing, where a racetrack with more than 400,000 seats attracts families, generations worth of them, all into the turnstiles to see who can try and do the improbable and the impossible and make it immortal. It's the same, right? Where you enter into the stands and you all become one. With the virtual counterpart, it's still worth the hype, I will say, because some of the top drivers in all of iRacing, not just in open wheel racing, put a star next to this event and say, I want to be able to race in this type of a car. I want to be able to win at this track. I want to be able to prove that I am one of the best of all time at the Brickyard. In other words, yes, I would agree, it's worth the hype, and it is still very much valuable in that regard to the platform, because some of the top drivers and all the service have made it clear they want to keep going, they want to keep racing this track with this car and win in this event today.
That's good. The thing I have though, Stefan, is that I'm looking for the qualifying standings for 2022, and some of the times I actually have to check, am I looking at standings for 2022, 2021, 2020, 2019, 2018, because with the greatest respect in the world, about 25 of the 33 drivers who were at the top of their game 4 or 5 years ago for this car are at the top of the game once again. Is that a sort of thing that we should let specialists be specialists? Or is it more the case that some of the bigger names, and we have got the issue today, for example, that the Porsche Tag Heuer Esports Supercup by iRacing is running pretty much at the same time as the iRacing Indy 500. So some of the names that we would love to see in this race, well, quite simply, they can't be here.
Yeah, exactly. The Indy 500 is the odd one of all these special events we have on iRacing. It is an open wheeler on a very low banked oval. Yes, it has that specialness to it. I myself have formed for it as well, having won the fixed and the open Indy 500 in the DW12 a few years back. but it is just so different to everything else we have because it's so much about strategy, not just when to pit, but where exactly you want to be in the field exactly when. And that is why you have to be such a specialist for just that one event, because it requires such a different set of skills compared to anything else. And I think that is what makes the hype for the Indy 500 so real in iRacing.
So what you're basically saying is it doesn't matter who the drivers are, the hype is there. The numbers, I'm looking at the numbers, 876 qualifiers for this race is comparable to what we've had the past few years. So you're saying it doesn't matter who the drivers are, basically, that the hype still exists, regardless who's in there.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, even for just the amateur driver who doesn't really have a setup for it, they are still going to be extremely hyped for it just because it is, even in real life, that prestigious event, and they know they want to have some of that milk as well.
Yeah, I am actually having a look. There is a very small community who deliberately try to go as slow as they can in the iRacing Indy 500. So the slowest qualifying for lap average, 1 minute 29.888. Congratulations to Jorge Varcella for that one. Position 876 in qualifying. The point there, Justin, to bring you back into this one, you know, there is so many drivers who qualify. And actually qualifying, I've always said, is one of the hardest things you can do on iRacing. Yes, you can become a world champion. Yes, you can run in a 24 hours endurance event. But I don't think people know until they start qualifying that those 16, well, technically it's 19, 20 corners, depending on how you classify pit exit, but it's 16 timed corners. And some of the stuff that I've seen and heard drivers do over the years is actually exactly the same as what you do at the racetrack. Different anti-roll bar, different weight jacket adjustments every single corner of every single lap. And it is, to put it frankly, about the same as someone competing in figure skating with the level of difficulty that can be involved in it.
You're right on that, Mark. And you mentioned 25 of the 33 having past experience in this event. I think it's pretty reasonable to say that part of that is, if you want to be able to win in this type of event, you need to have those connections and be able to be working with the drivers and teams who have been there. And that's why you see a lot of those same players still in there. It's hard to be that outsider, so to speak, who breaks into that mold and breaks that bubble and breaks into victory lane and tries to prove them wrong, because usually the drivers who are on the path of that, they usually end up joining that same pathway that puts them in that same respective group. So that's why I think you have that argument of where you might have the same drivers, yes, but it's also difficult to join that class of drivers to try to change the status quo, so to speak. In regards to qualifying too, it's critical to know those different weight jacker settings, how you have to set the ARB in the corners for each respective time, how the weather conditions will impact that. And depending on the resources, you might be with a team who might only have a few hours to do so, or you might have a team of say 50 who can put 2 to 3 months of work and preparation into it and be right there as soon as a single update's done with the car and know exactly how to get back to the same speed and then some with the next update. And that's where the major hard part is to come in to make the dances. You need to have the right grouping of people to make said dance at the top level.
What about you, Terry? Would that put you off having to put all that preparation in, or would you say that's alongside what you'd have to do for an endurance race or, you know, a Daytona 500, one of the long races that you have to do in the iRacing NASCAR series this year?
Well, I think I'm the only person on this panel that thinks that it's not worth the hype. I think that it's not really the big event that it used to be. You look at all the major setup shops out there, it doesn't deter me to want to do it. It's on my bucket list to call an Indy 500. Like, it's something that every kid growing up that has watched it, that's watched Bob Jenkins or watched one of these other people go out there and call this race on a major television network, and to see the growth that iRacing's had. But I don't think it's really worth the hype. You look at the online pages for the setup shops out there, there's only been two that I've seen so far that has openly put out the Indy 500 setup. But when we open the season with the Daytona 500 or the 24-hour of Daytona, they're everywhere. There's 50, 60 different setups out there that you could go run, and the practice starts the moment the last race ends towards the end of the season, and everybody wants to go put practice in for the 24. I personally practice for it, but I was too slow to get in the field. And then you look at the 500. They're always practicing. You got draft practice for 4 days. You got qualifying practice for 4 days. And then you go out and do the race. And I was fortunate enough to call the race here on RaceBot with Evan Pasoko. And that was a bucket list off of mine. Now, the 24, that's huge. Everybody wants to do it. But the Indy 500, in my opinion, it's not what it used to be. It's not the event that you just circle and go, I've got to win this. And there's some out there that might. 800 and something people qualified. There's millions of people on iRacing, and only 800 and something put a lap to qualify in with a team? It doesn't seem too big to me.
How would you change it?
I think we can make it more of a spectacle if you do it. I mean, you look at what a lot of people go into these races and go, well, there's no opportunity for me to win because you have the specialists that go race, right? But when you go to Daytona, per se, like you go out there to do that race, you have everybody in the field has a fraction of a chance to win. You could be the slowest person on the field, and you have a chance to win the Daytona 500, and you come across the line and do it. Put an event on that goes out and says, hey, let's make the setup faster. Let's incorporate the Indy drivers. Let's incorporate the iRacing drivers. I mean, the NIS 500, I'm almost positive I watched NASCAR drivers incorporate themselves on the server to come try to race that event because they knew that they could come out here and put some practice. You don't see an Indy driver come out here looking for the Indy 500 on iRacing. They're just like, I'll go try to win it in real life.
Yeah. I remember back, actually, this is an interesting point, where the race used to be the day before the 500. And in the last 5 years or so, they moved it to the week before the 500. Now, there is, of course, issues. If you have it the day before, you have the situation where potentially those people who have gone to Indianapolis, I mean, Arjuna from RaceBot TV is going to the 500 this year. It means that you're going to have to basically beg, borrow, steal a seat in a rig to try and even actually participate in the race. Then you've got to deal with the situation where if you're on site, you've got to remember as well, it's 4 hours out of your day during the Indy 500 weekend, Will. And I mean, all the iRacing special events, we've got to be honest, all the iRacing special events don't give out prize money. But when I was commentating this race 5 years ago, the only series that gave out major money were really the iRacing World Championships. And that's not the case anymore. So you've got, you know, BMW payouts, you've got Hyundai payouts, you've got your mates over at Ford and Next Level Racing. You know, they're giving out big payouts quite often. So is it the sort of thing, do you think maybe the 500 needs payouts? Does it need to be moved in terms of its dates to be better, or are you just happy how it is?
I think I do think it's taped up, and I understand the point of maybe putting prize money behind it, but I actually think fixed series is the fixed 500 that we saw the commentary for last weekend is probably, me and for most people, I think a more approachable event, and I actually see that becoming more popular on the pure basis of that. It's much easier for anyone to get into. You don't have to constantly be worrying about setups. I think that weight jacker and anti-roll bar changes is a big enough change already, like from road racing, for example. Whereas when you have to actually develop a setup as well, then, and then obviously you've got teams with years of experience of setting up these cars perfectly. I think it's much easier, even for someone at my level in road, to jump over into the fixed series and do that instead of doing the open. And also, you say, like, it clashes with the Porsche Tag Heuer Super Cup, which is not good because, you know, we've seen people like Diogo Pinto, who has competed in the past, and they can't compete because it's running at virtually the same time. With the amount of prep that goes into these special events these days, and, you know, you're looking at VCO, you know, you're looking at the Porsche series, with how much money that you can get from those series compared to what you can do for a special event, with the fact that you're going to need to put in tens of hundreds of hours into the prep, maybe it is time for iRacing to start putting a payout for the top of the top splits instead of, you know, being a free event, because everyone wants a prestige. Everyone wants to be named as a winner of an iRacing special event. But is it worth it anymore? you know, to come to an event and put in all the hours when you could, prepping for VCO, SCO, all of these other events, which will give you payouts.
Anyone want to agree, disagree with that stuff? I mean, don't forget, guys, you are allowed to argue with each other.
I agree 100% with them. I mean, I to prove that we're live, and somebody's probably like, oh, you're not live. A comment in the chat said that the fixed 500 setup needed to be better. And I don't agree with the second statement, because I think iRacing cares quite a ton about what they put on as a product. You know, if you go talk to anybody from the production side, from our side of the broadcasting world, if we say we're going to go put a show on and iRacing sees it and goes, you made our product look bad. Stop it. They care quite a ton about what goes on in the community and what happens in the server. But if you're going to go out here and tell me that the 24-hour of Daytona has something behind it, it has meaning behind it, and you have quite literally the biggest sponsors in the world coming out here to the 24, the same with the 500, and people capitalize on it. I mean, the Podium 500 runs every year, is burned as an annual event, and it has become one of the biggest races of the season, minus the NIS 500. Where's the Indy 500 on that list? Because I can sit here and list 10 races right now that I would rather sit and spend 4 hours of my day doing, because I have a meaning behind it and I can win something.
Now, that sounds really interesting. And I think, Justin, that's one of the interesting things that, I mean, I've been a part of the iRacing IndyCar community since 2010, which makes me seem incredibly old and stupid. But the big thing about the community there, they have got sponsors. You have got some big teams. I mean, let's be honest, Apex Racing, if they don't get a car inside the top four, they're going to have a massive, massive fit, because they deserve to be up there. You've got teams like i5G, you've got Powerslide, you know, long-serving IndyCar teams. But in some ways, it might seem as if that community is about 3-4 years behind the rest of the sim racing community in terms of big names, big sponsors really coming in and actually being able to take what is still an amateurish part of the iRacing platform and make it more semi-pro. And that's no disrespect to anyone in the community, not saying that, you know, everyone who runs in that community is amateur. I just mean the fact that there's not necessarily at the moment the sponsorship, the kind of support available for people to do what some of the other big sim racing teams have done over the last few years.
Well, there's the saying, right? You can't live on exposure points. Yes, it's good to be up in front of a crowd and say, I've been able to do this, I've been able to win this. But does it pay your light bill? Does it pay for food? Does it pay for all the amount of time you're putting in work-wise to be in that position to win? And that's that argument that you have, that competition argument of, do I do it this race, or this race? In those prize pools, no offense to some of our events, are a big thought process in regards to that, to think and think about and consider here. If you don't think about that line, then that's the hard thing, that there's a lot of teams who make decisions, as we've seen in the platform, and I think Terry and Will can probably jump on this a little bit here too, where that's very pivotal to make sure you can actually afford to race in that, so to speak. You have all the time, yes, but you kind of need to also be able to work to be able to have that luxury of the time to race.
Terry, it's all yours.
No, I agree. And I'm looking at Stefan up here. He looks like he has a very valid point that he wants to bring into this conversation. I just personally don't think that if you look at it from a broadcast standpoint, it's a crown jewel for me. It's a crown jewel that I want off my list, right? It's something that I've always wanted to do. I want to check them all off. I want to be 24. I want to do Daytona, Coke. I want to go do this. I want to go do that. Indy's one of them. I want it off my list. Driving wise, is it going to pay anything? Does it make it worth my while to come out here and do this? Because if it doesn't, then why am I showing up? Give me the title, or you're an Indy 500 winner. Okay, I'll walk outside and scream it from the rooftop. Hey, I won the iRacing Indy 500. And somebody next door is going to go, I don't care. But if you go, hey, I won $1,000 or $10,000 winning the Indy 500 on iRacing, they'll be like, hey, sweet, let's go to dinner.
Yeah. You're right. Stefan, it's all yours.
See, it all comes back to the point that I made for myself after winning the Indy 500 on the fixed and the open. I didn't want to have anything to do anymore with it, just simply for the fact that it's such a specialized card, such a specialized card track combo, that you need so much work put into, even just a fixed setup. You need to have a different ARB setting, a different weight checker setting for every single corner. There's just four. So you have to do four adjustments every single lap for even just qualifying. It just complicates the matches so much on a fixed setup, let alone it is so extremely complicated to set up the IR18 on top of that, that it nearly comes close to the IR05 once again. And everybody who drove that car knows how much that car is a pain to set up, even just on road courses that don't demand anything of the car. It just isn't really worth all the work if you're a privateer trying to enter the Indy 500 to make it work for yourself. And I think that's also the point why we don't see such big teams of the IndyCar community making that step to the outside, because their drivers are so specialized on that single car that they can't really drive anything else that successfully. It's not like a TCR that you can step up to a GT3 and still be fast. It is just a one single specialized car, pretty much like the top of the Skippy community as well as.
I will say we are going to have to move on a little bit, but we are going to pick up that conversation a little bit in the third part of our episode. I will say, by the way, this would be the point that if someone was giving us money for doing this, I'd sit here and read like a sponsor read, like true traditional American radio. I haven't got any money, unfortunately. People still need to pay us. So instead, I'm going to say that don't forget tomorrow, you go from one podcast to a relaunch of a new podcast. You've got Talking Temps. It's back tomorrow. And join our Juno Can Capacity on that one. Check that one out on our social media, Racebot TV on Facebook, Racebot TV on Twitter. Let's move on. And by the way, I've sent you guys a link. This is something that not a lot of people have seen, but let's be honest for a minute. And I'll start with whoever checks the share price of Motorsports Games. It's lost something like 95%. Yeah, Will, let's start with you then. If you put money into Motorsports Games 2 years ago, you would have to be living in a car in a field because you would have lost your house.
Exactly, and that's why I'm here. No, I'm joking. Motorsport Games. I'm firmly. I've always been on iRacing. You know. I really like the way that everyone's included with the special events. You know, anyone can enter, theoretically, you know, if you grind your I rating enough, anyone can get into that top split. And some of the things, you know, with the licensing from Motorsport Games, with the Le Mans series, with that being almost as elitist as you can get for sim racing, I don't like the idea of that personally. And, you know, I might end up competing in that this year if it continues going on, but I like it being open to everyone, and my view of, you know, how sim racing should be, considering that a lot of people, honestly, so many people from sim racing who are in sim racing at a high level in sim racing are people that couldn't afford to do it in real life. So why are we just trying to make sim racing elitist anyway? You look at anyone that's good, like at the top of sim racing that you can think of, pretty much most of them have had some real world experience. Josh Rogers, Chris Lullum, you know, just to mention a few of them, they've both had real world experience. I did a bit of karting that I could never afford to continue on in motorsport very much, so I went into esports. Why make it so? Why? I don't like it. Why make it high? Why make it a cost of entry to do one of these events?
I'm gonna backtrack a little bit, and I need to be honest. I really love some of the production that they do for the virtual 24-hour series. I think that they clearly have put a lot of money into it. They've got some really good broadcast partners in it. I mean, Martin Haven, absolutely ball to work with when I worked with him a couple of years ago. Then you've got, you know, Ben Constanduras. You have BCA Simi award-winning Lewis McLeod working on that coverage. So many other people as well. If you turned on that broadcast at the right time, you would actually think you are watching a 24 hours of Le Mans. So, Stefan, I see you nodding here. The production quality of the event has been incredible, but then I have a look at Steam numbers of how many people is running on R-Factor right now. And then I have a look at the document that I sent you and the fact that basically for the start of it, none of this money is actually going to the ACO. It's all allegedly going back to Motorsports Games. So, and to quote, the parties will amend the Articles of Association of the joint venture to establish the following priorities for the distribution of profit. MSG will first recoup the funding and royalty payment set forth within this document. So, at the moment, this is more than anything a cash cow for Motorsports Games. The ACO don't get any money down the line. And actually, I've thought it's ACO that needs some money so they can promote smaller level racing in their series.
It most definitely is a weird one. We can call it like that, more virtual. You know, the thing is, we as Butlerpile Motorsport, we have our agreement with one of the VCO teams as well. WEC teams as well. And we feel the two cars ourselves. And it always had that weird feeling as if, you know... the organization was great, obviously having the best race director in the world as well, Eduardo Freitas, actually doing the race directing as well is just on point. It's great to see. It's great to have. The production was so great, but it always felt like something was lacking. Something just didn't feel right. Also in the 24-hour race as well, then in the end of the season, just something didn't feel right every single turn, every single time. What was it? Just Arfak 2? What was it? The whole organization? It just wasn't able to nail down. The funniest thing at the end of the day then also was the NFT announcement, where people started to talk, are we also going to be part of that? Are they actually going to show our cars? Like, are they legally allowed that because it's our cars? That, and so on and so forth. So it's a good idea, but exclusivity is just not something I want to have. I want to drive it because I can afford it. I'm a sim. Porsche called their deal with EA back then a Need for Speed, one of the worst exclusivity deals they ever encountered. And that speaks volume because they were bound to Need for Speed, I think, for 20 years back then.
It was ridiculous, yeah. It was ridiculous. I remember that one, actually. And I say, actually, in terms of the top three motorsports deals that have gone to pot, Porsche quite clearly is number one. Our executive producer, Hugo Louise, will be laughing when I say this. I'm old enough to remember Sim Raceway when they signed the exclusive deal for the IndyCar thing. And they were supposed to build a video game. They were supposed to do this. And they actually signed one of Racebot's commentators to an exclusive deal. The way that, you know, it was panned out, it was going to be amazing. Let's be honest. Randy Bernard didn't know how to sign a contract for anything. How he actually survived in IndyCar for too long, I have no idea. But, you know, it was supposed to look good. And the next thing you know, they've shut up shop. They don't exist anymore.
Yeah.
And... the exclusivity is a massive part of that for me, Stefan, because if you go down to part two license agreement, point E, the license will include a first right of refusal of MSG to block future licenses to use the Circuit de 24 Erdemann, also known as Circuit de la Save, in or in connection with other video game products by matching any bona fide offer from a prospective third party license. That also basically extends to any race that wants to call itself a virtual 24 hours of Le Mans. It even gets worse the way I understand this, because we had a client come and ask us, well, okay, what happens if we do 23 hours in the northwest of France and the countryside? No, that's banned. Using the track for anything related to an endurance race with endurance-like cars is banned because of this JV.
Yeah, exactly. It just complicates so much for everybody. I mean, even if you're not doing... if you're doing an event on R-Factor 2 yourself that happens to be a 24-hour race at the Circuit de la Sarthe, you are going to have the same problem, even though you're just running it for your own community. You can't name it anything remotely to exactly that event. But all in all, I think the worst exclusivity deal, since we're on the topic right now, of all of sim racing or gaming in general, is Pikes Peak. If people don't know that, Pike's Peak has an exclusivity deal with Polyphony Games. Since 2016, it's only allowed to be in Gran Turismo games. Have you ever seen that in a Gran Turismo game? No, that's the point. Pike's Peak can't even get out of that deal because of that agreement. They are only allowed, I think, for another 5 years to be in Gran Turismo games and are not allowed to be approached by anybody else.
Going back to the Sim Raceway deal, I know for a fact IndyCar is in exactly the same situation with iRacing. I know this because I could literally count the days and the years to the day almost when they announced the DW12, Justin. And, you know, there will be some people, you know, who quite rightly will say, at the end of the day, car manufacturers, tracks, I mean, let's be honest, there are tracks in the world right now that cannot afford the license fee to host motor races. That's fine. Cars, tracks, everyone else need to make money. But how would you feel if we were to say that all of a sudden you can't race at Circuit de la Sarthe? Let's go further. You can't race at the Nürburgring because the deal was made there. You can't race at Spa. You can't race at Monza. You can't race at... Or before you know it, if you want to actually run a racetrack, you're going to have to hope that you've got the right car combination, track combination, and platform combination in order to actually run some of the virtual versions of your favorite events.
Well, let me phrase it this way in terms of the response here. There are plenty of different leagues and communities who might not even know those agreements are in place in the first place and will still run the race and surprisingly haven't gotten into the legal troubles yet. There's at least one or two leagues I can think of who are running races in the French countryside in a couple weeks and are near identical names. And they haven't had anything pop up from that. And it's their second or third go around with it since the agreement. And that's the frustrating thing too with some of the tracks you have to think of. You have this exclusive agreement. It doesn't stop those in the community from saying, let's just run it ourselves then. And that's another major gray legal hole where if you start suing your customers or your users of a game saying you can't run this event with this car combination with this extent, you enter an absolute can of worms that makes things to where you have a lot of backlash, to say the least, if you go that route, suing your customers.
I know there's actually been some legal issues from the Nürburgring in the past. We're using phrases like VLN. I know because it came to my desk eventually. But Terry, you take that idea and you bring it further. You've got a community event. You know, we've got loads of fans that haven't had to run through multiple qualifying series. They're doing a... And I can't remember if we invented the 24 hours in the French countryside or whether it's someone else. But I'm now going to call it, in case we do trademark that, 24 hours along some main roads where there's a KFC and a McDonald's. Because there is. Let's pretend they actually get really good viewership figures. And actually, it's a really long community event. And it's, you know, run great racing. And all of a sudden, this small little community just gets a massive lawsuit chucked on them. That's not going to feel good, is it?
Well, I just want to go back to what you said to start the show. The opinions of this panel is the opinions of this panel and does not reflect Race Button TV whatsoever. Because I'm going to say something that if anybody's watching this one and has something to do with motorsports games or whatever, they're not gonna like what I have to say, because I think it's a fraud. I think they're a giant fraud. Everything that they have done since day one of coming into this community, whether it's sim racing, whether it's putting something on Xbox or trying to get in the NASCAR community, has been an absolute utter disaster and has been a fraud since day one. I have personally went and told every single person that was working for motorsports games, their production level is fantastic. The R Factor, I thought, was a cool idea. I loved it. I hate that we have these sub deals that you can't run certain events and you can't call it certain events, because you can call a spade a queen or a whatever. You can say that it's a heart, that it's whatever, but it's still a spade at the end of the day. And if you're out there running Sebring, or you're running Le Mans, or you're running Nürburgring, or you're running Indy, or running whatever, and I've got to call it the Peanut Gallery 1500 because I can't call it what I want to call it, Well, what does that tell your fans? What does that tell the people that bought your game? What does that tell the people that come out here on iRacing and can run a better version of any of these events because you were too lazy to go out and do it yourself? Or you're too lazy to promote your events and you were too lazy to tell the general public that, hey, we made this deal. We did this deal. I mean, I sit there and watch Motorsports Game put a NASCAR game out that was so utterly disastrous with NASCAR Ignition that they didn't even have the guts to stand up and say, hey, we put a crappy game out. They said, no, guess what? We're not even going to put the next game out. We're going to sit here and go DLC 4, DLC 6, DLC 10, and then continuously push garbage down people's throat and charge them $60 like highway robbery. It's ridiculous. It is absolutely ridiculous.
In the argument of being fair, I will have to say you can't actually, or you can ask for permission, but you're not supposed to call an iRacing event at Indianapolis an Indianapolis 500 unless you get permission. So on and so forth. I mean, Will, we could go to a simple option. I'm surprised that, you know, this deal, etc., hasn't gone to the other platforms and said, you're not allowed anyone to run a hosted race in more than X number of hours using this track and car combination. You probably also remember, do you remember that time Autosport, they said we're going to start charging with tenner an episode of a magazine?
I can promise you, if I go out and do something, right, if I go out and do something personally, I'm going to do whatever I want in that event. Like, it's my event to do. Yeah. And I don't know if we mentioned this on here or not, but we talked about track car combinations. I know Monday Night Racing personally goes out and runs Mazda's at Martinsville. Huge event. Moonhead, I don't know if we mentioned him on here or not. Sorry if I broke the fourth wall. Moonhead runs whatever he wants to run, right? He goes out and runs 87s at the Circuit of the Americas. Like, he does all sorts of stuff and brings a different type of feel to an iRacing fan. I mean, the man pulls over 700-800 viewers at a time because he brings interesting content to the fans. Granted, sometimes his, you know, people might think his language is offensive, but okay. Mute it. Just watch the event. Watch what they do. I mean, Dale Jr. jumped in the event and did it and loved it. But to Motorsports Games, their top community, like their top community level people who work as their community leaders, their representatives or whatever, if they cared enough about the community, refunds would be issued out. R factor would not be a thing with Motorsports Games. And you would also have it to where your smaller league productions, your smaller people that are out there buying your game, trying to promote your content, would be pushed a little bit further. And you just wouldn't have a bunch of people sitting at a racetrack posting that they're sitting in the pits for BJ McLeod, for heaven's sakes, who hasn't finished a race since he started. Like, if you're going to do something like that, you at least have to make your fans and your people who bought the game feel special in some sense, like iRacing makes you feel special.
Will, yeah. Then Justin, go one at a time.
Was about to say, in terms of all that, it's very important to mention here too, with that there is the legal cases that are towards Motorsport Games in regards to what's going on in terms of the stock price, in terms of the products themselves, and of course the question marks of what's going to happen to the licensing, because it's not just with NASCAR, with the game that you get stuck in the pits and never left the pits in, so to speak. That's the best I can say on that. No offense to the developers on that side. But I will say this, you have the IndyCar license technically with them. You have BTCC's license with them. What's going to happen to that with a company which has already reported in its various quarterly calls, it might not have enough money to make it to the end of next year.
Good.
How is it going? What's going to happen? How many people are going to be impacted by this? And the question is, what's going to happen in the big picture in general?
For the third time, lucky, Will Chadwick, take it away.
Like I said, I agree everything with what Terry said. To be honest, I mean, it's what Motorsport Games really is it's just a shell company which has purchased up other organizations like Studio 397 and stuff. And in the point of the licensing, I really hope that, like you say, the non-licensing, I think, so stupid, because it just takes it away from the fans. The only people who are impacted are the fans and the sim racing community. Why would people want to get behind an event which is actually just restricting them? because, you know, the general sim racer can't get involved within VLMS. So why would they want to get behind it, which is like it doesn't make sense in many ways. But I think that, I don't know how the contracts are worded and stuff, but I wouldn't be surprised to see Motorsport Games bust within the next year, which I don't think necessarily would be a bad thing, to be honest.
I will say, I don't want R-Factor to go bust. R-Factor. I actually really like the competition. I like the fact that you've got iRacing, R-Factor 2, you've got Assetto Corsa, you've got Automobiles, you've got everything working together. That's good. Competition is good. I sound like I'm going to be a raging Republican at the moment, but competition in the sim racing market is good. And I think that if you end up folding into two companies or one company, it's going to be bad for everyone. I think that I do worry about what's going to happen. This might well be the last iRacing Indy 500 if people kick their heels and do something. We may never see BTCC cars. My only thing is, I mean, you know, what we do at Racebot is we like having things open to everyone. We don't like just focusing on elitist events. I really want to see R-Factor. Actually, no, I want R-Factor to go back to 8-9 years ago when there was a huge modding community who basically did everything around it. You have the ecosystem, you have the shell around it. That was amazing. I loved that part of the community. I worry, though, I'll come back to you here, Will, for a moment. I worry, though, that if Motorsports Games goes bust, they're just going to be bought out by another shell company, because of the rights. And the rights become the thing, and we don't see it in the games. And we don't see it in the games, fans can't enjoy it.
I think the addition of the BTCC cars to R-Factor kind of shows something that, you know, obviously we've not got official word on this, but is that saying that maybe that the licensing that these companies are giving out, ACO, British Touring Cars, are starting to have maybe doubts with working with them? Like, if there was a full BTCC game, would it have even, you know, would it have been as bad as the NASCAR game? That's hence why it's gone into an existed platform of R-Factor instead of going
sold as well.
Would it have sold? Yeah, because BTCC is fantastic. Everyone loves it. But even in the real world, if you go to a UK motorsport event, it's very, very apparent that British GT and GT cars in general is becoming almost more popular than touring cars. And also TCR UK, which uses the European style of touring cars that we see on iRacing and other sims, that's becoming really popular as well because it's half the price. I mean, that's more going into real world stuff and whether BTCC will continue forever, etc. But I don't know. I hope that what will happen is that hopefully, you know, we'll see these licenses be relaxed a bit and just everyone, I want everyone to be able to experience these events no matter what. And as long as you can have your exclusive licensing and have cool graphics and collabs with real world race directors, fantastic production. But as long as everyone across all the platforms can experience the same as your top pros and people that have the money to enter these big prize money events, as long as everyone can experience it, I think it's a much better thing for the community.
I will add as a final point, someone made a good comment on social media, SRO ACC. One of the things that really, we had to deal with a massive issue for an event we ran last year, that unless you're running in their official championships, you are not allowed a license to show any other paint apart from the ones that are on the actual sim. So licensing is a big thing, not just with RF2 ACO. I'm going to say that in the arena of fairness. But of course, this is still the biggest story, I think, that's going on in terms of licensing, etc. And I really do hope that we get to a point that we can have a race going down a straight road of a KFC and a McDonald's in your side. That brings us to our final topic today. We're gonna have to hurry this one up a little bit. We've only got 16 minutes left on air. I've got to prepare for the iRacing Indianapolis 500 live in an hour 15 minutes on Racebot TV. Will's got to get out of his car before someone actually does start thinking he's doing that activity that I'm not going to say on this broadcast. And everyone else has got other stuff to do. So Final topic for today, and by the way, thanks everyone, you've been great guests today. I want you always to come back. And Terry, we will get you on an Indy 500 podcast, don't you worry, I guarantee it. That's my word.
Thank you. I can be prepared today if you need me.
Hey, we can sort it out. We'll kick... No, I can't get with a team tie. They would do mutiny on me. But our final comment, elite or community? Because we're in that very weird situation now where you have got iRacing's community base is as big as it's ever been. There is still a community on our factor. There is still a massive community in ACC, other profiles, etc. And actually, there's still a massive community in gaming as a whole right now. F1 esports, actually, F1 games are selling more than I think they've been selling in years. But you've also then got these elite events, and we talked about one of them already quite extensively with the virtual Le Mans series. We've got a There's this question, and it's kind of right now, we're right at that pinnacle, and there is a new company coming to the fold. I mean, they've got a website up, so I'm going to name them. Rensport are coming up with a product where they're partnering with ESL. And it looks like, from everything that they have shown, that it is going to be a form for elite top-level drivers. And dare I say it, I had a question when I was doing a guest lecture the other day, and someone asked, what about sim racing and the Olympics? It looks as though Rensport is trying to build a platform that could end up in that position. But I'm going to round the table. I'm going to start with you first again, Justin. Community or elite racers? Is there a need to prioritize one over the other? And if so, who should you prioritize and why?
Well, let me put it this way. If you don't have a community, you don't have a game. You need to have a community that is devoted to consistently racing on your platform to be able to have that sim in the first place. That being said, you also have the elite side of the platform with the top drivers, where those are your most marketable competitors in a lot of the cases. Those are the people you have people wanting to join the platform to be the next X, to be the next Y, to be able to race against Z. So it's kind of a catch-22 where you obviously, off the top of your head, say, on the outside, you want to be able to prioritize the community and what their desires are, what do they want to see on your platform. But at the same time, if you don't prioritize at least partially to the elite, you don't have that marketability to continue to maintain the profit and grow said community. It's kind of almost a wheel of sorts, to where you need to sort that together, where you don't want to basically say, oh, you're not good enough as a driver, we only care about this guy's opinion because of X license or Y trophy. That, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I get both points there. Stefan, do you agree? Circle of motion, you have to have the elites to have the community, you have to have the community to have the elites.
I think as it of like CSGO LOL or whatever, the elite sells the game, but the community decides the game. Meaning you need to listen to the community, what it wants from the game, because that's your broad mass. You're not allowed to forget about the elite at the same time, because those are the guys that go out there, put on the big show, bring in the big sponsors, and sell your game for the community. So, in all respect to the elite, to the pros, you need to listen mostly to the community, because those are the guys who play your game the most.
You talked earlier on, Terry, about the thousands of people that participate in things like NIS, the thousands of people that participate in things like the iRacing, 24 Hours at Daytona, so on and so forth. So you are very big on the idea of, you know, massive community with the occasional racing driver coming in, with the occasional elite joining the party. If I was to say to you, as a CEO of insert random sim company here, here's $50 million. I want you to make a sim which is the most accurate we've ever done, focusing on this car, this track, but we're only going to use it for an invite series with 100 drivers that we've identified across the sim world. What would you say?
I would say I'd go put the best car on iRacing on the best track in iRacing. I would put the 87s at the Nashville Fairground, and I would have an invite only across the board. And granted, I might be a little biased to the best racetrack in there with the Tennessee chair, But it's true. I mean, we watched, if anybody watched the 87s at Rockingham for the Dale Jr. Foundation, that was pretty cool for the fans. And eRacer did an amazing job putting that event on. I thought it was pretty cool to see. But we talk about community, right? The community as a whole, especially for iRacing, and it's because this is what I'm more comfortable with and this is more what I do. You have 15-ish, 20-ish companies that broadcast races. RaceBot, For the Fans, eRacer, Podium. I've got a company that does something. You know, we got a lot that come together and do it. If we all work together as a giant team, right, as a community, and we all came together and made one massive thing and just did something simulcasted or megacasted or whatever, we bring the whole community together. But a lot of us work against one another. We don't come together and do anything. And it's the same thing when it comes to racing. If back to Motorsports Games, if they would have listened to their community and not listened to their quote unquote elitist, their big people, whatever, that game would more than likely be successful. That company more than likely would be successful. But instead, they listen to the people who go out and they're content creators, the people that go out and play their game and get paid thousands of dollars. If we take the money factor out of it and we just listen to pure based opinion of, hey, this game needs this or this track needs this or whatever, we could see a rise in a level of a game or a community that just loves to be a part of the community. And we don't see that at anything other than iRacing that really just loves to be a part of a community.
I will say that you seem to have just saved yourself $14,999,990. But hey, you know, you spend the money how you want to.
I'd like to go have a nice steak dinner, Will.
That's amazing. That's amazing. But I think there's a good point as well. And a little quick personal story, because I was part of the iRacing IndyCar community, I got to go to the 500. I would never been able to go to the 500 if it wasn't for actually knowing people who could, you know, pull some irons, twist some stuff. And, you know, let's bring you into this one, Will. We know each other because of iRacing. We know each other because of RaceBot. If we were on an elite platform, I'd probably be waiting to beat the living poop out of you every time I saw you, because I remember that one incident we had 7 years ago that I still haven't gotten over. Because that's the way sometimes these elite communities work. I've seen inserts in Racing Team A, some Racing Team B here. They are in a room and they will not talk to each other. And they seem to remember every little time one driver might attack them on the rear. It ain't fun managing these events. And my wife, you know, was saying that the event that we did last week was very different from the events we normally do. And it was refreshing not to just have to deal with all the drama.
Yeah, I mean, like you say, the elite community is very intense, very focused. They're all, you know, they're very specific friend groups, and, you know, certain teams don't mix with others. And that would become quite, if you were just having an elite game, it would become quite manipulative, because everyone always is trying to get the advantage. And if you're looking at a game which is just for elitist drivers, then everyone's going to be trying to, it's like the Michael Massey situation, everybody's going to be trying to pitch in to get the game changed in their own little way, which will slightly benefit them, or an event that will slightly benefit them in that way. You know, there's multiple events like that. But like you say, the community sells the games, which is what makes things so popular. You look at the F1 games, they are sold and made so popular, and even the esports drivers that do F1, whether you like the sim game, whatever you want to call it, or not, it makes it, you know, the drivers become famous in their own right because of how popular the link is. Jano Otmir, very, very, like, famous guy. Like, lots of people know who he is because of the sim game and because of the link that you have between sporting event, which turns into a game, which then turns into, oh, I like these two things, I wonder what the best are. So you need that community base coming from ideally something with inside the real world as well. I think they're very important, those types of links, in order to make a popular elitist level. Because, I mean, look at how popular F1 Esports is. It's insane.
Well, we are almost wrapping up. I am going to say, Terry, you've made me laugh the most today. So, in true PTI fashion, I'm going to give you 1 minute on the clock. What do you want to see in sim racing over the next 12 months? Off you go.
I want to see more people come together and stop working against each other. You got setup shops out there across this entire platform in iRacing in general that can't be in a room for 10 seconds with one another without whining, and I almost cussed, whining and complaining because they think their setups are better. Be a community. Stop being a bunch of Neanderthals and narcissists. Just come together as a whole and enjoy what we're doing, because we're here to make the community better, not pull the community apart.
I gave you a minute. You used 24.5 seconds.
That's all I needed.
Right, anyone else? You feel free to speak freely for the next minute or so. Anyone else got anything they want to wrap up with?
I want to see. I want to see all events accessible by everyone, and I'm sure I've already made that point very clear. And more VCO events. Absolutely love VCO events.
All right,
love you, Florian.
We all love Florian. Yeah, I'll give you a little heart as well. I will say. Terry, I will take the mickey out of you. Tennessee, they're not going to run the table. Really sorry. But
whatever. We're number one in your heart. We live rent-free in people's head. Okay. Tennessee's where it's at. I mean, we have championship gold hanging on our stuff here. You got your belt. I got my belt. We can fight for it.
Deal. But Justin, Stefan, Terry, Will, thank you so much. Thank you to our executive producer, Hugo Louise. If you're watching this live, in 1 hour, we're live for the iRacing Indy 500. If you're not watching this live, we are going to be putting this all up on Apple. We'll be back, let's say, in 2 weeks, shall we? We'll be back in 2 weeks. More topics, more fun. I'm Will Vincent. Talk to you later. Bye.